This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The state of North Carolina has many claims to fame, but there is likely none more popular or controversial than the slogan on our license plates, "First in Flight." This phrase commemorates the spectacular achievements of brothers Wilbur and Orville Wright, who piloted their first flight in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina in 1903. The latest book by Pulitzer Prize-winning author and historian David McCullough shares a new side of the Wright brothers' story. David traveled around the world and sifted through thousands of documents at the Library of Congress to uncover intimate details about the brothers. His book, The Wright Brothers, documents their early years, their technological aptitude, complex family relationships, and, of course, their lasting legacy. David McCullough will be at the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh tomorrow and at First Flight High School in Kitty Hawk this Sunday. But first, he joins us for a preview. David McCullough, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so settle this controversy for us once and for all. We're going to start you right there. Which state can claim to be the first in flight, please?
I think both can claim, rightfully claim, to have the honor of being the location where the Wright brothers created something that was never available or possible before. The Wright brothers flew the first time, as we all know, at Kitty Hawk, and that was indeed the first motor-powered flying machine to take off with a pilot, fly, and land. And while it was not a very long flight, it was all of 120 feet and lasted all of 12 seconds, it was indeed the first flight, and before the day was out, he and his brother were flying considerably farther. Wilbur's final flight that day was over 500 feet, and they knew for sure that they had done it, that they had created an airplane. However, they had not yet created a practical airplane, and that is a plane that would bank and turn, fly in circles or figure eights, take off, land. And that didn't really happen. That took another 2 years. It didn't really happen until they flew at what was their called their 19-5 flyer at Dayton, Ohio, just outside of Dayton, at what was known as Huffman Prairie, a cow pasture 8 miles out of town. And that was really the birth of the first plane. But Ohio also can claim the fact that they built the plane that flew at Kitty Hawk in Ohio. France, too, could claim to have a stake in all this because it was not until 1908, or fully 5 years after the Wrights flew at Kitty Hawk, that the world recognized that what they had done was indeed a fact. It wasn't talk. It wasn't a story being perpetrated by strange eccentrics.
Well, I certainly appreciate the detailed and balanced answer. I just want you to know that we're going to edit out everything after First Flight at Kitty Hawk.
I don't blame you. Kitty Hawk is one of the most historic points on the map anywhere in the world. And, of course, the world changed, and very rapidly. I just read in today's Wall Street Journal that 222 million passengers are expected to fly on American airplanes in the next 3 months of the summer, June, July, and August. Imagine, 222 million. And that's just something we take for granted. Orville Wright, who made that flight, lived to 1948, which means that I could have known him. I would have been 15 right. years old. If I had lived in Dayton, he would have been that nice old gentleman around the corner that I like to stop and talk to. And yet the world has so totally changed. And warfare has changed. Right. Travel has changed. Our sense of the size of the universe has changed everything.
Well, the fact that Orville lived into the 1940s is significant when you on that very point. I think the brothers had the sense going into this that once they had accomplished this great achievement of human flight, that would end war forever. I mean, after all, the reconnaissance you could do would make it impossible to field battles.
Absolutely.
And yet, by the time the 1940s rolled around, Orville had lived to see that that dream would not come true.
Yes, and Wilbur, who unfortunately died much too soon when he was still in his 40s, it died in typhoid fever in 1912, so he never lived to see World War I, even.
You know, that you paint a vivid portrait of their home life. And I, you know, I want to talk a little bit about this humble beginning. I mean, here are two guys who didn't have a college education. They grew up in very humble surroundings and yet had this powerful intellect and curiosity that led to this revolutionary development. Tell us about their growing up in Dayton.
Well, their father was an itinerant minister who had a very focused career, dedicated career, a mission, who was away from home about half the year every time. And they had no running water. They had no electricity, no indoor plumbing, no telephone. But it was a house full of books. And he was a great reader, and he wanted his children, his sons and daughter, to read everything and to enjoy reading. They all were great readers. They read history, natural history, fiction, classics. They read about art and architecture. They were interested in music. Wilbur played the harmonica. Orville played the mandolin. They were intellectually alive and full of curiosity. Once when Orville was famous, world-famous gentleman, he was asked by a reporter if he didn't agree that he and his brother were perfect examples of how far an American with talent and determination could go, having had none of the advantages growing up. And Orville didn't like that. He said, "That's not true, because we had the most valuable and important of all advantages, and that was we lived in a house that believed in and stimulated intellectual curiosity." The father also insisted that they learn to use the English language, both correctly and effectively, and that played a big part in their ultimate success. And when one reads their letters, which I've drawn an immense amount of material from for this book, and there are over 1,000 just private family letters, when you read those letters, it's humbling to think how superbly written they are by two people who never even finished high school. This is a great American adventure story, both physically and intellectually. They are venturing bravely into unknown territory, and particularly when they went to Kitty Hawk, which much farther away from home than they'd ever been in their lives.
What?
They'd never seen the ocean.
Well, and so why did they choose Kitty Hawk? Clearly they needed a place with some open space and some good wind. That could be kind of anywhere along the
Atlantic. Yes, the good wind was extremely important. And they wrote to the U.S. Weather Bureaus, where can we find steady, strong winds? And Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, was one of the places. But they also wanted soft sand to land on, and they didn't want a lot of crowds around them. They didn't want a lot of people watching them. But what they didn't reckon on were the storms, the rains and winds, violent storms and rains and winds, and on the mosquitoes. And when reading what their account of what that mosquito barrage that really was like, I don't think I could have taken it. I think I've been on the next boat to get back to the land as fast as I could.
A lot certainly has been written about the Wright brothers, but there's so many details and stories that your book contains that we didn't know as much about, particularly their sister Catherine and her role in all this.
Yes.
Tell us more about her.
Well, I feel very strongly that she deserves credit where credit's too long been overdue. She is opinionated, smart, bossy. She had a strong temper. She could get angry, wrathy, as she said. She was a school teacher. She taught Greek and Latin at Dayton High School. She's the only one of the family who went to college. But she was always there when they needed her. And in case of Orville, after his terrible crash at Fort Myer, she in many ways, I think, saved his life, because she left everything that she was working on back in Dayton, got immediately packed and on a train to Washington, and stayed with him in the hospital at his side, staying literally living in the hospital for a month and more. And he was terribly battered, broken bones, and had very nearly been killed. But he also was psychologically damaged. And she pulled him through it. And there was a great concern of whether he'd even ever walk again. And he not only walked again, he took to the air again, and he took to the air at Fort Myer, and he broke a lot of world records. So it was a comeback of a kind that you think might happen in a novel, but this happened in real life. Alas, the passenger he had with him, a young Army lieutenant named Selfridge, was killed. His was the first fatality in the history of aviation.
Catherine actually flew with Orville, did she not?
She flew with Wilbur in France, and she went up several times. And because it was turn of the century and ladies were still wearing long skirts, and out of modesty and the fear that the wind might blow her skirt up, they tied a rope around the lower part of her, below her knees, around the skirt. And a Paris fashion designer saw pictures of that and thought, ah, that's a great idea, and put out a line of dresses with the same effect. And they became a huge hit.
Yeah, it's always the marketing. It's never the product, is it? It's always the endorsements. That's where the money is.
Well, yeah, but having the idea, that's what this story is about to a large extent.
And they stuck with it, as did a lot of people. There was a race going on at the time around the world. What is shocking to me is how long it took people. And again, you talked about their facility with the language as communicators. Certainly Wilbur is someone willing to talk with crowds and write.
Yep.
And yet it took so long for people to pay attention to what, at least in aviation circles, was a big deal at the time. What was going
on? You're absolutely right. And it was that's the way we human beings are. We can't believe what's right there in front of our very faces. We're slow to catch on. And it's happened many times in history. That it lasted as long as it did, in this case, is quite remarkable, almost unbelievable.
He did have an audience in Paris, or both of the brothers did. And
yes.
That's, in fact, their presence in France is what led you to this story. Maybe you can tell about their success there and how you found out about them.
Well, my last book was called The Greater Journey, which is about Americans who went to Paris to improve their skills in medicine, architecture, art, literature, sculpture, so forth, because there were no schools of architecture. There were our medical schools were really far behind those in France in particular. During my ventures into the 20th century, I ran into the Wright brothers, and I was astonished. What in the world were they doing there? Because at that point, I didn't know much more about them than most of us do. And then I found out that they spent all this time in France and that they were keenly interested in architecture and art, and that the French went wild over them, and they were heroes beyond anything in our country's story up until then, except for Benjamin Franklin during his years in France.
One of the more interesting things, again, discoveries in your book that we hadn't known about, getting back to their early life, was the traumatic experience that Wilbur had as a young man with a hockey accident and sort of how that played out. I think that whole story is pretty interesting. Maybe I can get you to tell it for us.
Yes, indeed. It marked a swerve in the direction of his life, which at first seemed to be one of the worst things that possibly could happen to a young man, but in fact was immensely beneficial, not just to his ultimate career, but to history. In his high school years, when he was about 18, he was hit in the face playing hockey. Hockey stick hit him right in his upper front teeth, knocked out all his upper front teeth. And he was terribly painful situation, of course, psychologically for some young man to have all his teeth knocked out, have to start wearing false teeth, was difficult and painful. So he went into a kind of what we would call depression, and he retreated from life. He went into a kind of hermitage in his own little house there on Hawthorne Street in Dayton, but he began reading. And reading intensely about all kinds of things, and that reading led him to reading about aviation. So it changed his whole intellectual life, enlarged his curiosity, enlarged his knowledge of the world. And if we knew no more about it than that, that was sufficient. But in the course of my research, I discovered that the young man who hit him with the stick would go on to become one of the most notorious serial killers, murderers, in the history of Ohio, who murdered his father and his mother, his brother, and estimated 12 more besides. His name was Oliver Ho, and he was working as a boy, very poor boy. His father was a house painter, as a clerk in the neighborhood drugstore. And his rotting teeth were so painful that he was constantly in agony. And the druggist, feeling sorry for him, gave him what were then the only painkillers available, and they were cocaine pills, straight cocaine. And he became addicted, and he became an alcoholic, and he had to be institutionalized in the local institution for the insane. And then he went on to become a murderer. Now, all this, he was, as a boy, he was known as the neighborhood bully, but he lived in the same neighborhood, grew up in the same atmosphere. So you have this good and bad side by, literally side by side. And I think it's important to know that, important that that's an element in the story, that this wasn't a kind of Norman Rockwell environment, which it could well be perceived as if we didn't know more about it.
Well, now take us back to Kitty Hawk, because, again, the scene, one of the more attractive features of Kitty Hawk for the Wright brothers was the fact that they could do this in relative secrecy. But there were people at Kitty Hawk, and they must have found these brothers from Dayton somewhat strange, did they?
They did. John T. Daniel, who was a wonderful character, who worked at the life-saving station there, has a marvelous description that he related in an interview of how the Wrights would be out there imitating the soaring birds with their arms and wrists and hands. And they do it for hours. They're trying to figure out the secret of how soaring birds can hang up there without flapping their wings and can bank and turn and so forth. And that's what led them to their really success, because, as Orville later said, learning how to fly from soaring birds is like learning a magic trick from a magician. And the local people seeing these men, and they wore business suits with starched white collars and ties, even while they're doing their work out in the middle of nowhere on the Outer Banks. And keep in mind, that in those days, the Outer Banks, there was no bridge over to the Outer Banks. There were no roads there. Very relatively few people lived there. And those who did were very hard working. They had to be to survive. And it was seeing how hard the Wright brothers worked that made the local people have a change of mind, that maybe they were all right after all. Daniels called them the workingest boys I ever saw. And he later on was one of the people that was there helping the Wright brothers the day that they made their epic historic flight, December 17th, 1903.
David McCullough, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. I look forward immensely to getting down to North Carolina this week.
David McCullough, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and historian, whose latest book documents the story of the Wright brothers. David's going to be talking about his book at the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh tomorrow, and the First Flight High School in Kitty Hawk this Sunday. You can find out details at our website, stateofthings.org. There's more just ahead. Stay tuned.